Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Hey, welcome to another episode of This Life, Bob.
Bob Forrest and Dr. Drew.
Yes, sir.
I spoke for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And but for the grace of God, you're here, Bob.
My car overheated on the way here.
In the middle of the desert.
Well, yeah, yesterday. It was a nightmare. It got stuck in the sand. Never follow GPS in a remote rural area because the roads are dirt and it still will tell you to go on them.
Oh.
So Elvis and I got stuck. Then we were lost in the desert.
Elvis, your son.
He kept saying, we should call the sheriff. The sheriffs always rescue people. He was like an army ranger. I was like panicked, and he was like, this is a great adventure.
Uh-oh.
This is Daddy Elvis' adventure.
That may be the gene.
Yeah, exactly. So then we walked for miles and miles and miles.
You walked? You left the car and walked?
Yeah, we were in the middle of nowhere in the Mojave Desert or whatever. So then I see these two houses. We start walking towards them. As we walk towards them, they look like meth labs.
Perfect.
And a pit bull comes out.
Oh, well, so they were meth labs. Good.
Turned out one of the houses was a good guy. That happens to a lot of people who follow GPS in the rural.
Funny.
So I'm doing this as a public service announcement.
Oh, my God. Hysterical.
If you're in the desert where there's dirt roads, don't put GPS in because it gives you the shortest route. The shortest route is not the best desert route.
Listen, I've been in the outbacks of certain parts of this country, too, where it will give you country roads and stuff. Forget the dirt roads. It'll just send you anywhere but the freeway. So, yeah, I agree with that. Waze is normally
so
a good thing.
So it broke my radiator getting stuck in the sand so that it overheated on the way here, but I'm here.
I'd like to introduce you all to our latest sponsor. It is the Rocky Mountain Treatment Center. They're in Montana. And if you've been listening to anything that Bob and I have been talking about over the years, you know that we're very particular about an addiction treatment. We don't take recommendations lightly, so we've looked into these guys pretty carefully. And the Rocky Mountain Treatment Center happens to be one I am able to recommend, and I'm happy to do so. They focus on individualized treatment of the patients, including their entire well-being based on a biopsychosocial model. This is what Bob and I have done for years and years. They don't just look at addiction. They look at the psychiatric issues, the psychological issues, the trauma issues, all aspects of the physical and mental health. And of course, you've heard me stress the importance of this for long-term success. There's staying sober, but there's what I call real recovery, which is dealing with all the risk factors that set people up for bad addiction. They're in Great Falls, Montana. It's a 26-bed facility surrounded by amazing Montana landscape. Patients can have a range of recreational therapies, including equine therapy. For more information on Rocky Mountain Treatment Center, click on their banner on the thislifepodcast.com website or at drdrew.com or visit their site at rocky.rehab. That is simply rocky.rehab. So we got
we
a couple
guests.
Of great guests. First guest, Jen Kirkman. Jen very kindly was...
I'm just butting in.
She's butting in.
I'm going to be very... I'll be quiet.
Well, it turns out Jen's a fan of our show.
Perfect.
Yeah. Why are you a fan of our show?
I'm really into psychology and addiction and stuff. Obsessed.
Obsessed.
And I'm like a codependent Al-Anon.
So I was telling her, we were talking in the kitchen, that there seems to be four categories of celebrity rehab fans, right?
Yeah.
Which I think you're only aware of a couple. But there's a lot of different types of people. The real core audience of celebrity rehab fans are very compassionate towards the addicts.
Mm-hmm.
That rating that VH1 gets at 1.1 or whatever it is, that's people who love the show and love addicts. They're probably codependent, but they always are very compassionate when I meet them.
Yeah.
Then there's another part of the celebrity rehab zeitgeist that are people that never really watched the show, but just like the salaciousness of it all.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Then there's that boost that we always have in the first two episodes, which is Schadenfreude, wanting to see Amber throw up in a bucket. Which is, I've been told by more men that that's one of the sexiest things ever.
Well, let's bring Amber in. Amber Smith here.
Amber Smith.
Intro.
It was some kind of like sexy scene award online or something.
No,
yes.
Yeah.
See, Drew's not aware of this kind of stuff. We have to blow his mind with this.
I am blown by that. That's my mind is blown. That's so... You
just saw an addict and opiate withdrawals thrown up in a bucket. Guys saw a whole different aspect of that.
Oh, my God.
They'll see sex wherever they want it. I'm not blown away.
I understand that about men, but they never cease to disappoint me. You know, it goes lower and lower all the time. But poor Amber, how do you feel about being the object of that?
Well, I remember being so sick, and I remember you coming in the next day and say it was like day four.
Yeah.
I mean, I was fine the first 3 days and just being so ill. I was just trying to get it up and out. Because my withdrawals were like 2 weeks long, restless leg syndrome. That's one of the worst things. But Celebrity Rehab was such a great experience for me because people are so compassionate. They're like, how are you? You're kind of acting out what either they're going through or they know someone who's gone through
the
it.
The audience,
yeah. It hits them so deep.
I know it does.
It really does.
Yeah. Well, you're one of them.
Yeah, and I think as someone, I mean, I have my own... I've never had a substance addiction problem, but my behaviors veer into that category. And so I do 12-step stuff. I do therapy. But it's for me, I think when you see the most... All right, this is a ridiculous example, but I was very moved when Caitlyn Jenner became Caitlyn Jenner.
Mm-hmm.
Because to see someone not live their truth, everyone can relate to that. That's just an amazingly huge example. So I think the average person who's not an addict will watch people getting a second chance or exploring things that really mess them up. And anyone can relate to that. Like everyone, whether you have the gene to be an addict or
no, that's
whatever,
right. I mean, this is all about, it's all about being a human being.
And there's the fourth component of the audience, which is professionals, people who are interested in the condition of living.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Being a human.
Yeah.
Right.
And the, and people don't really talk about that much anymore.
No,
just
I
talk
know.
About ISIS and, you know.
Here's my question, though. Speaking of Caitlin, did those girls lose their dad? How do they...
The young ones?
Yes. Like, we were just talking about love addiction, love avoidance. And even though we're aware of our patterns, help. How do you get out of it? I'm very aware that I'm attracted to pathology.
Yeah.
But how do you
There's two sort of simplistic, maybe overly simplistic way of answering that. One is you're always going to be attracted to those kinds of people. That's just now kind of in you. So you have to, A, decrease the power of that attraction somehow, and that's therapy, and B, not respond to that attraction. You have to be able to talk to yourself and go, I know where this is going. I know I've read the script before. This is not going to, yes, it would be very gratifying in the moment, but it's going to end up bad for me. And you have to believe that and know that. But the power has to be diminished because it's so powerful. And
right.
that's therapy. And you and I last we talked was, what, 2 years ago or something?
Right.
How have things been going since then?
Great. But the reason I brought that up, though, was just because I look at people now and I look at their lives when they're young and they just kind of like fulfill what they see, what's role modeled before them.
Yeah.
And my dad was gone at three. So I just pick men that, you know, abandon and reject me.
Yep, perfect.
And they're just gone
well done, and I'm confused.
And sometimes they don't even say goodbye. So I was just curious about those two young girls about will they pick men?
Yes, okay. they will, unless they have a lot of therapy, they will pick things that reenact that experience for them.
I mean,
right?
I don't think we're picking the healthiest family on earth to look as models.
Right.
You know, I don't think any of them are going to have successful lives other than be very wealthy. See, that's America's myth, that if you're very wealthy, you're successful.
Right.
It's not.
Or that you can't feel any emotional pain because you're wealthy and people get... I remember thinking, like, I was thinking about Madonna recently, and I was thinking, she's in her late 50s. She's had two marriages.
You're obsessed with Madonna.
I am totally. Her latest album is like an ode to relationship problems. She still gets her heart broken. She still hasn't figured it out. Madonna is not good at relationships.
Right.
And I was saying that to someone, and they go, "Yeah, but she's rich. She can get on a yacht anytime." I go, "Does that make her?
No.
How she feels like shit on the yacht?" Then,
yeah, right.
That's
she's
a
still
weird meanness that goes on.
Yeah,
but like, even more so than that, when you have your kids not wanting to come home to you, you got troubles.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't care how rich or successful you are.
That's right. In this country, generally, we don't put a value and a priority on relationships. And whenever people examine happiness, meaning in life, always the same thing hits the top of the scale, which is important people. Important people to you. Meaning who you love, who you're close to, who you're connected to. That's what gives life its meaning. And and by the way, and if you have trouble...
But don't you start from a very early age modeling that?
Yes.
Healthy relationships.
Well, but you can have treatments and you can do things that can reestablish, you know, versions of healthy relationships. May not be perfect. Progress, not perfection.
You know what when I was stuck in Glendale, they
which was your
selling
latest
the lotto thing, and it's $999 million in front of where I was stuck, right? And I was thinking, what if I won that, like $800 million next week?
Yeah.
I'd give everyone that I love like $1 million.
Oh,
I know that
oh,
you would think that. Yeah. Like
first, I split it with her. I'd split it with her.
Yeah, yeah. Just like
yeah.
It just seems. And then I thought some people should get more, and I started thinking some people should get less. And I think because you spread out, you know, you're lucky if you have. I have 6 or 8 really close people in my mm-hmm. life. So then, but there, I still have 20, 30, 40 people that I love. Nate, I'd give him $1 million for sure.
I always fantasize about that. Nate's our engineer. I'd give them $1 million, but then I'd give them a consultation with Susie Orman so they don't screw it up.
Oh, you went, oh, that's control. I figure all my friends are going to blow it right off the bat.
No, I would just really control.
Kill themselves. But Amber, last time we talked, you were in a really satisfying relationship, it seemed like, no?
I was. And then I started to really like him.
Oh.
Then what happened?
Pushed him away.
He got too clingy?
He just detached.
Oh,
but
shit.
Why, though? The mechanism is why.
Ooh, man, it got good, too. After about 1.5 years, we all had the same friends. We traveled a lot. I got really comfortable. And then one time we went on a trip, and I was very insecure. There was this weird feeling of, does he like me? I've never felt like that with him before. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't hear from him again. And then I, you know, for a couple weeks, and I thought he was mad at me because we did have a little fight. Mm-hmm. And then he just faded out of the picture. And I thought, wow, that feeling of insecure that I was feeling, because I had really started to like him and he was pulling away.
Wait a minute. After 1.5 years, he faded? He didn't break up?
It just kind of like faded out.
But how weird that he didn't at least
give
you a...
Yeah, that's what everybody says. That's what everybody says.
Was there something, do you think, that he... Because I just went through something like this. With your insecurity, whatever it made you do, even if it... Like, suddenly you're not perfect and he can't handle that and goodbye. Like, you're not allowed to be human ever.
Right.
Or the relationship's not able to be perfect or something. Or he doesn't want to... Who knows what his experience was? Because he didn't give you a chance to tell you, which is
so... No, I have no idea. I have no idea. He just kind of faded out. Last I heard, he was dealing with some lawyers or something, and that was it. So it makes me feel about this big. It makes me feel
it's awful.
There was no relationship. Yeah. It was all in my head.
Yeah.
And there was no
there
closure.
Was. Something happened.
But
something happened, and there's something about him, not about you.
Yeah.
Something
he
about
wanted
him.
Wanted a mommy, and then you showed weakness. All the roles are changed around. See, I'm like a throwback to you. You and I are like raised by the 20s people.
Did you have
you know
mom
mean?
And dad?
So we're
we did.
We loved
Except
our dads
he was raised by his sister
grandfather,
mom.
But I mean,
tell the story real quick for you.
Well, my sister's my mother, and my grandparents adopted me, and I didn't
sister
know about
is
it.
Your
That's
mother?
About it.
Your sister's your mother? You thought sister was ended up being your mom?
Yeah, she's my real mother. But her parents adopted
Nicholson?
Me. Yeah, it happened to him, happened to John Lennon. So I'm in good company.
What?
I know.
But anyways.
So Amber, don't feel bad.
I don't really know how to comprehend that.
But there's throwbacks in male role models, Drew. If Susan's acting insecure, you comfort her, right?
Yes.
That's what guys do.
Yes.
Guys nowadays don't. They're like, fuck this, man.
Yep.
They are. I swear to God. I know a lot of guys.
It's true. Wait, I was going to ask you based on
what they become stalkers. That's the other thing. Yeah. If you don't respond the way they want, they stalk. Mm-hmm. Those are the two moves. It's either, hey, you're trouble. You're difficult.
And I think a lot of men have trouble understanding that my insecurity is my issue. I'm not clinging to you. I'm not obsessed with you. I've had someone say to me once, I'm not that great. I go, oh, I know. I'm just insecure because it's my issue is coming up and I know how to deal with it. But if you could give me fucking 10 minutes to be human, that'd be great.
Ooh, good luck.
You know.
It's getting bad, guys.
The interpersonal landscape is
getting bad.
I pray to God every night, make me a lesbian. That's how you know you cannot choose it. Because I'm begging, please.
The Lord, the
please,
baby
God.
Jesus.
Hear Jennifer, hear Jen Kirkman's prayer.
My girlfriends and I have been talking a lot about like communal living. Because I moved out to L.A. I'm in Manhattan Beach now, and I'm in this community. And I left my garage door up, and my neighbors called me and said, your garage door is up. And I'm like, who's this call? It was so weird to
that's
have
nice.
Like,
that's nice.
It's amazing.
Yeah, that's nice.
But it freaked me out. It was too much like,
too close.
You're looking at me, you're monitoring me. It took me weeks to just kind of relax into it.
Yeah, yeah.
They're my best friends.
Yeah, yeah.
They have a little 9-year-old daughter, and I'm going, it's intimate. It just threw me. I'm used to Los Angeles where you get in your apartment building and you run up into your apartment and you lock the door and you hope nobody knocks on the door. It's very strange. It's so isolated out here.
But healthy intimacy is the challenge, right?
Yes.
And that's we were talking about last time you were in. That Amber said something the last time I talked to her that stayed with me. She goes, I'm laughing because it was kind of funny but kind of intense. You said, I used to always talk to you about feelings. Remember that?
Yes.
and she like are you, what are you feeling? Can you connect to your feelings? And she now after 2 years of feeling numb after you got sober?
Many years.
Yeah, many years of Vietnam. She goes, I never understood what you were even talking about. What do you mean?
He would say things like, how do you feel? And has any pain come up? And I'm going, what is he talking about, this pain? It's all pain. Just, you know, I have like ADD. That's just pain in the moment. I always want to escape into other stuff because there's pain in the moment. It's low level and kind of subconscious, but it's there.
That's
I had
trauma.
No idea
that's
what trauma. You were talking about.
Yeah, that's trauma.
It took a long time. And you said something else about, I said, well, why do I need to talk to my friends? You know, and he said, because you need an emotional landscape. So now when I overreact to things and I talk to my friends, they're like, oh, just, that's not a big deal. Or the opposite.
Yeah.
I'll say, well, he never wrote me back. Oh, well. And she'll go, wait a minute. You write to him and say, you need to respond to me. They help you gain reality. Like, where are you in reality?
And all of it, including your neighbors, is an intimacy, right? It's all to have a healthy intimacy, which is something that was hard for you.
Very. Mm. Because look what happened after a year and a half he left.
Well, what do you do about the being like attracted to a pathology and you have to decrease that? How can you train someone to be attracted to the right things?
Because
usually
those people
bore.
Right. Those people bore or cling or whatever.
I have these problems too. I think you can't. Once you have that system going, what I've noticed is after lots of years of trying to figure it out is I cannot force things to go the way they always go. Right?
No.
Because we all have a natural history.
That's not an understandable statement. Say, try a different way.
Okay. So if you start taking somebody for granted, right?
That
you
in a relationship.
That if that's a common thing that I do consistently and I'd heard it through the years.
Okay.
I'm not going to do that. When I find myself losing interest, I'm going to buck up and say, how are you doing today?
And?
And then that keeps the thing from going into the same spiral. Old spiral.
That's one element.
It's a coping element.
You have to have awareness, attention.
Of yourself and what you tend to do and force the other person to become in your eyes.
And then change and then maintain the change. And that's hard.
That's the hardest part.
That's hard.
Right. Maintain
the change.
How do
you know if you're legitimately losing interest the way a normal person would, or it's some pathology crap?
Because they like you, and suddenly you feel
rabbit hole, Alice.
Well, but that's right, and that's what has to be kind of teased out. But the part that diminishes the power of this, and you open Bob by saying you've been sorting these things out for years, is having an intimate relationship with a professional, having therapy, so that who rebuilds the landscape, that same landscape I was talking about. Really teaches you to tolerate closeness that then you go out in the world and you tolerate similar kinds of closeness. So you'll still be aroused by the same old shit, but it won't have the same power over you.
I had this therapist and I was going to her once a week and she said to me, she goes, listen, when you come in here once a week, I'm just getting a diary reading. You know, you're just telling me what your week's like. I want to see you twice a week.
Yeah, wow. That's what I was told too.
Did we make progress?
I went twice a week to my therapy too.
Oh my God. Now it's not a diary reading. Now you're talking about feelings and I cried in front of her and it's so painful.
It gets a little weird too when you're that, right? It gets a little like, you're like out of your, I don't know. It's a weird, it's hard to describe.
I was Tuesdays and Fridays. And you really melted down and fell apart on Tuesday, but now you're reconstituted, but you're back in their lobby and you're like, oh, fuck, do we have to pick up where we were?
I'm totally fine now.
That's all behind me.
But you feel better afterwards? One of my best friends is an addictionologist, actually, building this relationship with her because she's so present and aware and, you know, and how do you feel and what do you feel about that? Wow. I'm used to talking to a wall, you know? I'm used to giving a lot of attention to people that don't give any back.
I'm sorry that didn't work out. That seemed to be whatever it was. It still seemed it was unusually close. And satisfying to you.
Yes, very.
Because you didn't really have satisfying relationships before. That. It was nourishing in a way that other ones had not been. So whatever it was.
Yeah.
Let's be grateful.
Yes.
You know, he's an asshole for ending it the way he did. He had his own fucked up reasons for it. They're not have anything to do with you, really. I know you have trouble hearing.
Well,
that.
I just wonder. You know, a part of me, could I handle whatever he had to say?
Yeah,
you could have. You got to not live in fear of that.
By the way, whatever it is, it would be kind of weirdly distorted because whatever makes somebody after you're going to have just fade away. It's such a pussy move. It's such a pathetic move. So he may not even be able to tell you what was really going on for him.
Here's another thing that happens in relationships that you can stop doing. When you find a guy, you kind of don't see your old friends anymore because you're now with the guy. Guys do that with girls too and vice versa. when my last marriage ended, I was talking with this friend of mine who we've known each other since we were 19, and he had just gone through a divorce, and we're both sitting there, and he goes, I keep thinking, who's going to be at my bedside when I'm dying? And it's probably going to be you and Pete. And I started to think about that because it was true. We have deep intimacy, me and a couple of my guy friends. Mm. Like, that's who I love. That's who I trust. And why do we devalue that as soon as we get in a relationship? Because yes. That becomes the priority.
Sex. it hits a different kind of a system.
But I would say, like, even...
But no, but I'm saying, you know what I mean? Lock after in that a relationship down. And you stop having your social interactions. Yeah, right. With
literally,
people.
I would argue that that's some sort of biological mechanism that's nesting, preparing to build a family. You know,
are
some
you
sort
happier
of weird...
in a relationship than with your friends? Is that...
No, I didn't say that. Okay. I just said that he asked why that happens.
Right. Locked and loaded.
And I think it's sort of a mechanism that some people get too fed into, for sure.
Yes,
no doubt. But that it's natural that people kind of pair off and go, you know, they separate from their mainstream because they're nesting. You know, effectively, that's what's biologically happening, at least. Now, I'm not saying it's healthy or good, particularly if you have issues around love addiction and stuff. I think it's bad. Then it over. Or you can do what Jen does, go nest and then invite all your friends back in. Only the single ones, though.
Yeah, well, no, I had like a recent relationship where this person knew all my friends and we would go out together. Or
single
I still,
friends.
No, in relationships.
Because remember, like, that you said when you were married, you had all your single friends coming around.
Oh, yeah. No, when I was married, yes. But in my most recent relationship, I included him in my life. I made sure that I was accountable to everyone. I still saw everyone. I called spreading it around. Mm-hmm. But we had a different kind of intimate, obviously different than other people, but I was at least relieved with this breakup. I didn't have to crawl back to people and hey, remember me? It's been 8 months since we've hung out. You know, thank God I didn't have that. But I do notice friends, even in healthy marriages, and I'm sure these people aren't having sex more than once a month. It's been so long.
But sex, I mean sexual.
No, right. They're
sexual
the only
drive, reproductive drive,
yeah.
That kind of stuff.
But they will just, that's their one person. That's their one intimacy. And then it's like, if you want to hang out with one of the people in the couple, they have to bring the other person. And it's like, what about me and my intimacy with you? I'm not getting it if you bring your spouse because we've got to not go as deep because Andrew doesn't know as much about.
You just mentioned that with a male friend of yours.
Yeah.
Remember that the female was the one that he was sort of foisting you on?
Yeah. I think that happens too if you have opposite sex friendships and you're straight. The wife gets uncomfortable. I have to come along.
Or the man. Yeah.
Someone has to come along and it's like, I honestly feel like, you know, not everyone has a lot of time. So if I want to see my girlfriend and she just shows up with her husband without telling me, I can't tell her some of my secrets. My bonding with her is not complete. Her bonding's fine because she's got him there and me.
Right.
And I think that that's something no one talks about because you sound like the angry single person who's like, but it's really from a very deep level. I feel very abandoned when people show up with their spouse that I'm not as familiar with. I feel like I blocked off this time for intimacy. I'm not getting it now.
Mm.
And it's
do
a
you
healthy.
Say
yeah.
It?
Of course not. I go on a podcast and say it.
Yeah.
No, but no, now that I'm learning how to name what it is, I probably wouldn't say it right after it happened, but I might.
You
make
say,
sure
I,
next time
say,
we hang
I wanna,
out.
I want to get together just
time.
You and I because
yeah.
You got to straighten it out. Because
yeah.
A lot of married couples, they don't have say anymore. You just kind of, you're going where you're told. That's how I felt. Is that wrong?
Telling. but
no,
you
but
do
I
get a lot
I would go sometimes and I would think like, I'm not supposed to be here right now. You
right.
Know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the guy probably knew that.
Yeah. So you guys should just get up and leave.
Yeah, no, it's true. If you feel that, you should. I agree with that. So, Amber, now are things going okay? Are they?
Well, so what happened is I was in entertainment for a while, but I just lost the passion for it. You know, I was in it 25 years. And then about a year and a half ago, I got sick. Right after the relationship kind of ended, I just couldn't sleep. I was looking at, sugar all night long, wanting sugar. Something was wrong. So I just did like the doctor tour of Los Angeles and I went to, you know, everyone and ran blood tests. I really couldn't find anything, but it launched me on a whole new path. I am obsessed about health, especially alternative. I'm now in school to be a homeopath.
Fantastic.
So it's a 3-year school. I can't believe this world is open to me. I was a junk food addict. I never exercised. But something's going on. I haven't figured out what's going on with me. But, and it's going on with a lot of people. I mean, 1 in 2 get cancer. half the world by 2025 is going to be autistic, half the children. That's ridiculous.
That is a weird piece of data. That we don't know if that's true or not, but there is a big number. Yeah, no matter what, everyone agrees.
I keep thinking, is it overdiagnosis or is just the world getting sicker?
We don't know.
We don't know.
Looks like it's not being overdiagnosed.
Could it be a parasite?
Yes, that's what I always talk about, and people shoot me down. I think it's all parasitical.
He's
I think
doctor.
It's pathogens.
Let's find out. No? Well, come on, doctor.
Well, the only association so far that has been, and again, they're looking actively because they don't know yet, is a older father. That the genetic fragility.
Come on now, get off that.
I'm not saying you have to get an autistic child if you're older father, but yeah. Older father is the one, because your DNA gets more fragile as you age. And so that's the one thing that they point at and go, well, we found this association. Mm. Whether it's causative, we don't know.
Yeah.
So
these kids have real bad gut problems.
Yeah, they do.
You know, that's kind of strange, too. Mm-hmm. And they say that, you know, if you have a bad gut, you get bullied in school. If you don't have a lot of good bacteria.
You want to get real freaked out? Mm. So knowing all you know about medicine and germs and viruses and everything, isn't it a miracle that everybody isn't sick every day?
Oh, it's a miracle. Well, listen, throughout history, we didn't live out of childhood. That's why absolutely. You were probably living out of childhood was like, what, 1 in 50 or something? But that's why when Susan does, you know, has her psychics on her show and they talk to, you know, they're doing talking to people like, where are all the dead children, you guys? Why don't you talk to them? Because they outnumber the adults and the Civil War generals that you talk to
by
thousands of orders of magnitude, because most people were either peasants or died in childbirth. And half of women died in childbirth.
Yeah,
throughout
yeah.
human history, you died in childbirth.
Flu that came with the vomiting and diarrhea that came around a couple months ago.
The norovirus?
Yeah, I got that. That was the most horrible thing. I would have died of that 100 years ago.
Possibly. Huh? Possibly.
Probably. Because, you know, there was this thing, 1915, the fourth leading cause of death was diarrhea.
Well, but
how is that?
Yeah, but that was diarrhea like that. We were an underdeveloped country then. That was cholera. That was Shigella. That was Salmonella back then.
So if Jenny McCarthy had her way, wouldn't all those things come back?
no, because we don't have
vaccines. That was a joke.
Oh.
We don't have vaccines against any of those things. But we've improved our food system and our water supply. The single biggest medical advancement is sanitation. Because that in those days, when that stuff would got into the water, that's how we got it, or got into the food. And that's why when you go to certain South American and Central American countries, you still get that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we see it coming up here from the south of the border. All the time, including worms and all kinds of stuff, all kinds of stuff coming up. Cysticercosis. It was when I was worked at the county hospital in Los Angeles. Cysticercosis, which is a tapeworm larva that gets into your brain, was the leading cause.
That's my worst nightmare.
Hold on a second.
My dog licks my mouth. I'm so scared something's going in there.
But that was the leading cause of seizure, new onset seizure that we saw at the time. And in all the textbooks, they would just put it as an afterthought. Like, well, in rare cases, cysticercosis might cause seizure. But in LA County, because of everyone coming up from south of the border, it was the leading cause.
Oh, my God.
Leading cause. Happened at my uncle's home. He had a painter in there. Got flopped down with a seizure. Cysticercosis.
And how do you get the things out of the brain?
Medicine. Medication. Okay.
Have you ever heard of MMS?
No.
Chlorine dioxide? They're detoxing these. It's very controversial, but they're detoxing these autistic children. And they're like coming alive. They're just, you know.
I know Jenny did that kind of stuff. And she's sort of off it now. She did a lot of stuff. Yeah. But I don't know specifics. So I'm not going to speak on her behalf.
I'm very interested in that stuff.
But we're getting way from relationships is where I was sort of hoping to focus our conversation. I think you guys are running away from relationship conversations. You all look.
I'm right here.
All right.
Here.
All right. Good. You've been going through some relationships.
Always.
Yeah.
Yeah. Divorce is hard now. So the thing I'm interested in is role reversals.
Mm-hmm.
The male, female role reversals. Everything's equal. Caitlyn Jenner, you can't do this. You can't do that. Everything's equal.
Except
if you get a divorce.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then nothing's equal. Then the guy needs to go sleep in a tent in the park.
Well, I think it's different when you have kids, because I got divorced.
I don't know why I'm looking at you, but I'm looking at you.
I got divorced, and I experienced the opposite.
Were you the main breadwinner?
Oh, deadbeat? You had a deadbeat guy?
No, not at all. We were both completely equal with everything, and we decided to end it ourselves, meaning let's just split what's in the bank account. And he didn't want to live in the apartment anyway. He's like, I want to live in a different part of town, so you keep the apartment, I'll get another one. And then weirdly, he got a lawyer, and the lawyer came in.
Oh, yeah.
And then made everything horrible, and I lost a lot of money.
And most of the money went to the lawyer.
We both did, but I was like, this is stupid.
Most go through the lawyer.
No, he wasn't at all. It was just, we both lost stuff. It was crazy, but I just happened to have, anyway, it was just this weird thing. But anyway, but yeah, I know what you're saying. I bet if we had kids, it would be like,
it's torture.
Then they really.
No, I think you're right. Everything's equal, but they're still, the roles don't reverse then usually.
Weren't those?
And to be fair, I was talking with somebody.
But there's a lot of deadbeats. Like, I'm not a deadbeat.
And no, I understand. But listen,
there's a lot of deadbeats that walk out on their kids and their.
I know what it was. We were talking to, but Kroll and I had one of the actors from Last Man on Earth on the Adam and Drew show, and he was telling us about the place where they filmed that show. If you watch, it's a great show, and it was Sinatra's party pad. And we started talking about how his ex-wives were treated, you know, were just like, hey, fuck you, get out of here. You know, they'd get nothing. And so they had to tolerate horrible things because there was sort of no way to protect themselves.
Right.
And so I thought, well, thank God we're not doing that. This is far better than that. We just got, the pendulum has just gone the other way, as it often does.
Yeah.
But here's something I want to tell Amber about, which is we're hearing about all the time on the radio now, and you will have some insight into this, which is, you said something about young males just leaving.
As soon as they're not a mommy or going to take care of them, they run to somebody else.
I'll tell you what's under
that. I've watched that a lot around the 12-step world.
Right. Okay. So so they either just abandon like your guy does. And we're talking about younger guys and they're young adults primarily, right, Bob, would you say?
Yeah.
Okay,
but hold on.
Let me tell you a story, which is a lot of that starts with, well, I've got porn. I'm fine. A lot of them literally just are like, oh, well, I'm okay because I got...
No, are you kidding me?
I am not kidding you. They will say like, women, they're kind of difficult. They're tough. I'm okay.
Oh, we're in worse shape than I thought we were.
I always suspected this, but I hate hearing it.
Hang on. And it gets worse. Flip side is because they never really navigate the goings and coming of a relationship, when they find someone, they tend to get kind of love addicted and love obsessed. The woman doesn't reciprocate. So they don't fight. They go, okay, I'll be your friend. Then we get the call 2 years later. This is the call. I've had this now more times than I can count. So they describe this relationship, and she said she's not that, and you know she doesn't want to have a relationship right now. So I was a friend, and it's 2 years now. I've been her friend, and now it's time. Now it's time. She needs to. I put my time in. No, to be in the relationship. I put my time in as a friend, and now let's go.
So what's that?
It's a weird stalking love addiction, which is you don't accept that the woman isn't reciprocating. You go, okay, well, I'll put in my time. And now it's been long enough. Let's go.
Oh, okay. So they just don't face the pain of the rejection.
They're in absolute denial, delusion about it. And they just stay in the, and but then they rationalize that, well, I've done the friendship thing long enough.
But that
now.
Fits. You're talking about young, mid-20s, early 20s
guys. I'm talking about 20s, yes.
Yeah. So that's who I live with and that's who I deal with.
But I want to get
they don't even have social friends because it's all social media.
Yeah. So
they don't know how to talk to people.
But you understand that phenomenon.
Oh, completely. Yeah. But I mean, so they get this taste of intimacy. Well, not even really.
It's a love addiction.
Right.
It's a love addiction.
Right.
Flat out. But because before they're just, I've got my porn, I'm fine. Then they actually get in.
Right.
And then it's, they can't deal with it. They certainly can't deal with it coming.
So they care about the person, though.
They're love addicted. They're just completely upset. They're stalking them.
But that also means that they're smothering. But
I'm always the devil's advocate. Uh-huh. But the woman is allowing that, too, by having this little play toy.
Well, yes.
It's funny because I know about that stuff, but I get wildly uncomfortable with... And that's because of my own
guys
issues.
Who are in love with you that you're not. You
I'm
don't
wildly
like.
Uncomfortable. I cannot.
A lot of girls like that.
And it makes me feel really bad about myself because I go, some why can't like the people I love me? But it makes me fucking. I can't be around anyone who is like we were talking about on this last podcast. I had a friend who's now dead that I thought liked me, and I was just I couldn't even handle it. I cannot unless I'm totally oblivious to it. But most of my male friends they're
friends.
Why can't you handle it? Does it feel smothering to you?
It just feels like I'm sad and I'm wasting it. It doesn't feel like seeing me. It feels like they're projecting a fantasy, and I hate not being seen for who I am.
Also, it'll give you codependency stuff, too. Right?
So then what happens?
Maybe.
So is it that, okay, they're so unhappy on the inside, right? And they project, I guess, you know, all love, I guess, to a certain extent might be projection, right?
Yep.
But this is like on steroids. Yep. And then they think they're going to get their own love back.
Yeah.
Then after a year and a half, when they don't get their own self. It's really self-love they're looking for, right?
Well, yes, but I hate the terminology because people that don't know how to love misinterpret what that is. They don't know how. It's like telling somebody to walk that's never walked.
Think, you
know, it's like,
let me just get.
They go, well, I love myself. I love myself.
Oh, no,
it's something different. Yeah, yeah.
No, but
yeah.
Don't you think at the 6 month point there was a little tip off that this guy's not just your fucking friend and you should start to have a boundary with them?
Yeah.
That's what's missing.
Absolutely.
That's what's missing.
Yes, but I think
because
some
two
girls
years down the road, there's just so many misleading.
But Amber,
there.
Some girls what?
Well, some girls do. I do have a girlfriend.
That
she
thrives
loves
on
when
it.
Yes.
They
oh yeah, that's when you're in ego, completely in ego,
yeah.
And you see someone completely obsessed. They don't care that they're wasting the person's time. There are some women that really like that.
They dig
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's absolutely. But that's what you're objecting to.
Right. I think that goes on. See, I always think there's not one side that's good and healthy and one side that's bad and wrong. There's this mutual
sick
dysfunction
dance.
That goes
right.
on
well,
in
the
all
guys,
kinds of
right,
relationships.
The guys find the woman that will allow that kind of love addicted sort of contact. And by the way, the love addict, you know, ultimately knows there's going to be a rejection, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's what makes him extra super needy and clingy.
Yes.
So he finds somebody that's going to eventually reject and sabotage. He's picking that. And then she, of course, whatever her experience is, she likes that kind of attention and just lets it kind of trickle
in. Well, with someone
in.
With that pathology, let's see, she turned around and was like, you're right. I am in love with you. Would he then fade out? Would he be able to handle it?
Hard to know. It depends on their situation. Yeah. He might end up sabotaging it, or they might end up getting so sort of Romeo and Juliet.
I
stuff,
think they might do that for 6 weeks or 2 months, and then it'll blow
that's
up.
That's right. Yeah. 6 weeks to
happen.
2 months.
Yeah, something will happen.
They would probably get this big elation if the person turned around.
Yeah.
But then somehow it'd be like, you know, she's just not what I thought she'd be.
Exactly. The fantasy goes, well, I have this theory, like, and it's stereotypical, but that men are so not conditioned to be in touch with their feelings that they are freaked out when women have any feelings. And so I know most women are like, oh, you haven't even seen feelings.
Right.
Like, you're just freaked out by my baseline being a woman. Like,
oh,
well, then this will never work with anybody because...
But I think
it's
drama.
It's not
drama.
Yeah.
It's feelings.
Yeah, because they're afraid of their own.
So let's break that down. It's kind of interesting.
Because I think, let's say a guy saw me cry. Let's say she told me a story and I started to cry.
Yeah.
I feel like when certain guys, when they see that, they go, oh my God, if someone's crying, it must be really, really bad. I don't ever want to feel that way. I don't relate.
So you have a part of your brain called the corpus callosum that's much bigger than the man, much bigger. So you're communicating both sides of your brain. The right side of the brain is sort of the emotional holistic piece. And so you're getting more contact with the emotional systems, more comfort with it, more regulation of it. You're more in it all
you
the time.
You can have both at the same time,
we can't.
Which men can't.
We can't. We can't
Why?
Really do it.
I don't like that because
we're wired
God
that
created
way.
Us like, but he created us to be together.
Yes. Okay. So hold on. Yes, I totally agree. So we need to. We need
That's
to,
why women are superior and should be in charge.
I don't believe that either. I think we're
I do.
Equal.
No,
you
women
do?
Are better. Yeah, women are better.
We're equal.
As it pertains to this material, you're definitely
Women
better.
Are better.
Why can't men get like a brain
Well, because women wanted to be men. Because
wait, that
said,
would take away from the other
to
stuff.
Be men and this and that, and that's what I'm going to go out on a limb here.
Uh-oh.
Something went terribly wrong in the 70s.
Yes, 60s. I totally agree with you.
70s
here.
When it played
I
out.
Remember.
Grew up in our faces.
Bottom to the 70s. I think 70s is the biggest, deepest period of depravity this country's ever been through. I
but
agree with you.
But something went wrong where we just needed to respect women as the superior beings that they already were for thousands of years instead of fight to be equal to men.
Right.
Because women are scumbags.
Well, no.
Like, let's, and then the great
How many wars happened? Have women started?
Hang on. Let me I don't know, Guinevere. Let me just say that we mistook, we overgeneralize equality in the workplace with being the same. In other words, and we do that with equality generally. Abraham Lincoln articulated it pretty well. Equality doesn't mean equal in all respects. It means we have equal opportunity, equal quality under the law, equal consideration. But our differences need to be valued and sort of revered. And those differences were repressed. We're not different. We're the same.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And I'm saying let's value the difference. In fact, I consider the difference superior, in particular as it pertains to this material. So let me finish your aphorism here, your story, which was that the man seeing emotion it he's not particularly comfortable and flexible with it.
I was going to say, I would try to figure out why, what's causing
it. Well, men automatically automatically want to fix.
Yeah, they want to fix.
Automatically.
And women always identify go, so you can fix.
Right. Yeah. And the idea of sitting with the feeling with you and just containing it or giving you a holding environment, we talked about that. We don't know how to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's what women do with a child. They give a frame for the baby to start to regulate and feel better. When I saw my wife doing that the first time, I was like, what the fuck is that? That is sensational. I don't know how you know how to do that. And I, you know, I needed a lot of therapy later to help me understand what that was. But it's something women do kind of naturally and want that from men. Men can do it. We can. But we have to you have to literally like walk us through it. We don't automatically
know how to do it. Well, that's the other quagmire. What's the difference between a normal person walking a man through the thing and then someone being codependent and trying to change? It's too much for us.
Well, what's he open to? What's he want? If a guy says, help me do a better job of being with you while you're crying. If you say
I don't think most guys are saying that.
No one's ever said that to me in my life.
Yeah, I can't imagine me breaking down. I would be so fearful this person would be like, oh my God, this is just too much drama.
Yes.
That
must be what that guy did then.
He said no drama.
Oh, jeez.
No drama. What does that mean?
When she said it.
No
it means
humanness.
No humanity.
That's
no
right.
It means be
That's
a poor
right.
channel,
That's
like
right.
you said.
Yeah, be a porn channel. But it's also...
So should we invest in you porn stock?
No, I fucking know that. But here's my bigger question, which is...
What about when they get reality goggles?
Oh,
it's
please.
All game, set, match, right?
Yeah.
I think we should all do like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and get our ability to feel and love romantically removed and then just be a society of people that are friends and you know, people want to have if people
that's what we want to do in Manhattan.
It costs so much
communal
pain.
Living because I have my girlfriends and I love my girlfriends and just you know one of the girlfriends has a baby and we don't know if it's going to work out so we want to do like this community living because right now that's all we have. We're not buying our own BS, by the way.
You know
what I mean? We actually wouldn't mind a man, but you know what I mean?
It's your solution. Best. Yeah, right. It's your solution to the situations
right.
that exist. It's very interesting.
I mean, I'm like half kidding. Oof. A quarter.
No, but seriously, come
kidding.
Live in the community with us.
But see, when you say communal living, I get like too many people in my business.
But that's the source of happiness, right? I mean, it is. You said that one time. You can't have happiness. What was the quote? Without
risk.
Well,
No. It was something about true happiness comes from relationships.
Yeah. It's intimacy.
That's so true.
It's important people. Important people is where people
but
measure
don't you
happiness.
Think in this country or this society, when you say that, you mean... Sister, brother, friend.
Yes.
But in this world, it's romantic relationship. How could you be happy unless either your relationship is perfect or you're in one? Like you've got The Bachelor and you've got Married at First Sight and everything.
That's all just the craziest shit I ever seen.
Yeah. And it's like, but, you know, and people who don't know it's fake are like, just that whole notion that how could someone. Obviously, people like to be in relationships. It's fun. But there's periods where if you're not, you're not. You're not longing to be in one. It's not like you're in starvation or dehydrated.
No, but I do long to be in one, and I don't like that about myself.
Yeah.
I have a fun time being single, but there's this part of me that just yearns for it.
But that doesn't mean you're miserable day to day, right? You're not
no,
waking up unhappy.
But my girlfriend said the other day she was in a bad relationship, and she said, I'd rather be in no relationship than a bad one. Well,
you thought you'd rather be in a bad one than
one? No, just I still yearn for the relationship. Why hasn't that cut off?
Even if it doesn't feed you.
Well, I want it to feed me. It's just this unending feeling. But I guess it's just humanity, right?
Well, longing is a tough feeling. There's something called longing for the end of longing, which
yes!
is what you're describing. And and that's the whole. You had a big hole, remember?
Yes.
And that's the hole. You got to keep filling. Keep filling. And you're on your way. You
it's
know,
so
you're
getting
your
better.
Way.
I mean, my girlfriends.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm so.
What is the journey
satiated.
With your mom? What's been the journey with your mom?
My mom. We thought she had Alzheimer's. Then she started to shake. She fell
Uh-oh.
And ended up in the hospital. And she had Parkinson's.
She's still living on that cool place on Pico.
Yes, she is.
I love that.
It has
place.
All my covers everywhere. You got to see. It's like 75 of my magazine covers.
Wow.
Yeah, it's cool. So she was in the hospital and she was shaking. And they said, you know, she has Parkinson's.
Yeah.
They put her on L-dopamine. Oh, my gosh. She's back.
Oh,
she's
good.
Talking.
Oh,
she's
good.
Walking. She's out of the wheelchair. She doesn't have to have helpers.
Yeah, good.
But there's, you know, L-dopamine you get a tolerance to. So that's
well,
scary.
There's a lot of it's Sinemet, and there's a lot of anti-Parkinsonian medication. A lot. They start to have lots of side effects. You have to be careful.
Really?
Yeah, but there are a lot of stuff to be done, including these days they do with these implantable devices. Have they talked to her about that yet?
No, but she's amazing.
They have these. If she starts getting intolerant to the medicine or intolerant to the side effects, there's mechanical stuff they can actually do. Pretty benign. It's pretty well perfected now. I mean,
so here's the journey of healing to me. So nobody likes to touch on the fact why we're so fucked up.
Meaning all of us.
How we were raised. Because then it looks like finger pointing at who raised us.
Right.
Oh.
And we all intellectually know who caused it. The question is how to forgive it or how to process it. Mm-hmm. And understand that they did the best they can. See, 12-step world is big about they did the best they can, but not really feeling, well, they should have done. I was told they did the best they could by every therapist or every rehab or any sponsor I had in 12-step world. And finally, I just said, you know what? They could have done fucking better.
Yeah.
They should have done fucking better.
Yeah, I want to be mad at my mom.
That feeling of anger then turned into empathy and understanding through a conversation.
No,
it's quite
fine to say, that's fucked up. And especially to do that to a kid. What the fuck is the matter with these people? But you know what? They were fucked up.
Yeah, they were.
And it's like, and somehow I have to be okay. It's up to me now to be okay. And then the final phase is how do you then have a relationship with people that you look at and go, that you were fucked up. That is not okay.
Right.
You helped me when I was telling you how fucked up my sister mom is or whatever. And I, you know, because of my needing to have approval from her, I talk to her every day and she always shames you, tells you you're either the greatest or the worst, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm just going on for years about
that for our patients. We get lots of that from our patients.
So I get years and years of telling Drew about my mom. Then she comes to visit and he meets her and we're hanging out. And the next day he goes, your mom's great.
Oh my God, I would have killed you.
Everyone
and then
loves
he
my
said,
mom.
But then he said, can you imagine what it was like when she was 14 in 1960 to be pregnant?
14?
I never had thought of that.
Yeah.
That traumatizing experience for her.
Well, she had to pretend she was your sister, right? Because it was
I don't think that's as bad as being 14 years old in Catholic school.
Bad. No, but that's why.
You know how she found out she was pregnant? She had a stomach and they sent her to the nurse's thing at school.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, then I started living her life, you know, left brain kind of thinking
empathy,
and feeling. And it kind of became integrated. Like she, you know. So we can have better boundaries and we can do things better and I love her and you know what I mean?
But I think the big part of what you just said is admitting there's a lot of fucked upness right now from the 70s, from all the shit that went on. Like the wheels came off the wagon in the 60s. And maybe it's the aftermath of the excesses of, you know, sitting on top of the world at the end of World War II. And being so economically...
But wasn't there a joke in the late 70s, early 80s that why do women want to be equal when they're superior? I remember hearing that
there's
joke.
A famous quote.
Yeah.
It's like, don't strive to be equal to men.
Everybody should make the same amount of money for doing the same thing. I don't even know what the fuck the argument is. But being the same, there's no way. I have a penis. Girls have vaginas.
But these young
girls can
went
give
from...
life. You know, boys watch you porn.
They went from in the 50s, you know, young girls wanted to get married. And now young girls are like this. No, I mean, I'll do them, but I don't want anything like that.
I'll have a baby. But
oh,
not get
my
married.
God. There's so and it's just such denial. There's too much pain there. Yeah. And they wear these crowns and, you know, I'm a princess. I'm a little diva. I'm a queen. Treat me like a queen.
Stuff.
That's just feeling this big.
Yeah.
They're feeling an inch tall and just ego crap.
But that's the parents doing that too. They're feeding the children the permission to do that, to be that. That's something to aspire to. That's why I'm not a big fan of the Kardashians.
Just quickly.
If that's something to aspire to for young women, shame on the parents of those.
I'm having a little experience. You might want to write about this, Amber, because there's something powerful in your perspective on all this stuff. I don't know what, but
makes me mad.
But you have a clarity about it that I've not really seen lately.
You've been experiencing a lot of it, girl.
I've watched it.
So,
a lot of pain.
So we might think about it. Just
a lot of trial and error.
All right, thank you.
Drew knows a guy you can just talk to on the phone. He'll write a book.
Oh yeah.
I got to do that.
Tucker Max has a company.
I want to do that.
He'll pay them a sum of money. They will interview you for hours and hours and hours and hours and then hand you your book
what?
Back.
Yes, Amber, you could do that.
That'd be a great gift for someone.
I thought you were joking.
You could do that.
That's so cool. Who thought of that?
It's a great idea. Tucker's a smart dude. Say what you will about him.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know him. I just know what I think of him.
Well, now he's been in analysis for years. And he's a totally different guy.
He's
married with a kid.
Good for him.
Oh, was he one of your exes?
No.
Oh,
I just, come on. We were talking about analysis.
Yeah. I'm sending Jen to analysis. It's time.
Okay.
See, now I'm all worried my therapist is listening to this.
Well, it's my fault.
What's the difference between therapy and analysis?
Yes, there is a difference.
What?
That's right. A big difference.
Oh, it's you know, as
different thoughts about things.
It's a different structure. It's a different and it's deeper. It's a deeper
therapy's
process.
About coping.
Let's just clarify.
To me, therapy is about coping, but. Analysis is about
what
really,
happened. You are.
Really,
well, no,
deep.
It's almost. I don't know how to describe it because there's analysis and then there's analysis too. There's different kinds of analytic processes, but it's almost delving into. It's
philosophical.
Not about, it's right. It's not about health and wellness.
It's not about you exactly.
Like archetypes.
It's almost more of an exploration of who you are in your life and its meaning. And it's time consuming and it's expensive. What I'm referring to is not just that. I'm referring to something a little different.
Because I still like the cognitive, like, now what are the new behaviors I should adopt?
You do that automatically.
You know more about yourself than most of the people that I encounter.
I told her that.
You're very self-aware.
I said, Jen, you need therapy.
I'm miserable and crazy. But really human. Self-aware.
You are not miserable and crazy.
I am. You don't see me when I'm alone.
What do? You bang your head against
cry.
The wall?
No, I just lay in bed and cry.
You smell lavenders.
No, I get it. No, I'm with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I'm aware of stuff. And now what? It's like I thought awareness was the key. Right?
Well, that's what you're saying about there? The parent stuff. Like, I think there's all these kinds of therapy where it's like you figure out what happened and you learn not to blame them and you forgive and then you stop. It's like now what I'm curious in is the patterns I learned to cope with this, that, and the other. How are they affecting me negatively?
Well, I think the cognitive stuff is overemphasized, my humble self.
Oh. Yeah,
well, no, but wait a minute. I'm going to defend that. People are non-functional, Drew.
No.
I deal with 300 non-functional human beings. CBT works good to get them functioning.
No, I know. No. Listen to me. I'm not saying it shouldn't be done. I'm saying it's overemphasized. And we've left out the other piece, which is what I was talking about, feeling
true
the whole.
Healing. Yeah. True healing. Is a term that is a code that we have at work. Watch this. I don't think most people have enough horsepower to do that anymore. Do you know what horsepower is? That was a code we had at work.
These two do.
That motivation. People weren't intellectually.
Oh, they're
done. There's all kinds of horsepower. There's like motivation. There's smarts. There's awareness.
Emotionally intelligent.
Attentional.
Able to.
Those are usually the people who go.
You guys are candidates.
Those are usually the people who say things like, I'm not going to therapy because I'm going to work it out on my own. As if the most lonely thing to do.
No, you know what the LA code is? I got the 12 steps. That's all I need.
Oh, my gosh. So that's just identity. Now they found an identity, and then it stops.
The 12 steps get you to baseline.
Oh, my gosh.
After years and years of sobriety, gets you to baseline.
That's right. You just stop the medication.
And then if you want to really become semi-whole or not cry every night laying in bed.
I mean, by the way, I really don't cry every night in bed. But when I do, I overreact to it. I'm like, what is happening? Like
you get panicked about it?
I'm the same way with health. I get a little bit of a... Like, I will not tolerate not feeling 100% for 10
seconds.
Wrong
with me?
Oh, so wait till you get my age. Oh, my God.
Well, I'm 41, almost 42, and things are starting to happen, and I'm like, not acceptable.
It's 50. Yeah, 50 is the cutoff. Things start breaking, and you just don't even fix them anymore at 50. Am I right?
Fuck yeah. It's very discouraging.
Drew thinks we're not designed to live this long.
We're not.
If you go to any old cemetery, you're right.
Yeah, oh no, we're absolutely not. It's but for the grace of God that we have interventions and things we do. But you know, I don't know if you know, I went through a big operation a couple of years ago and that kicked the crap out of me. And now everything, it's like, oh, when's the next shoe going to drop? All right, what's next?
I, as I was driving up here, I thought about you. Did they tell you to stop eating sugar? Or do they not? Do they not
well,
say
I,
that?
I already have a carbohydrate problem. I'm sure.
What do you mean?
I have a metabolic syndrome and stuff, so I really have to limit my carbohydrates. I do. I try not to eat sugars or breads, but I love them.
Yeah, I know.
Love them. It's the closest thing I've experienced to opiate withdrawal. When I go on binges,
your legs ache.
I just get the preoccupation, the irritability, the discontent, the desperation, all that stuff.
I go through a cycle every month where I just no sugar, no nothing, eat healthy. I just was at the raw juice today. That's where I ate. But then come like Wednesday, I'll get a big bag of licorice and eat the whole thing or Sin Sugs from Trader Joe's.
Oh my God.
And then the next day, my legs ache.
Jesus.
Really?
Licorice has weird things that it can make.
Affect
your kidney. Your kidney metabolism.
Yeah, it feels like dope sick, kind of like what you're describing.
Yeah. Hey, if you want to be vain, sugar.
Sugar what?
Rips the collagen out of your face.
Nice.
Sugar apparently turns to insulin, part of the aging process.
Yeah, hyperinsulinemia is bad for you, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was just curious, when you went through all that, how some of those rock stars
still look so young.
It's in my family. It's always breast cancer. Breast cancer.
Oh my gosh. It's terrifying.
Is it really family history of cancer?
This is what I wanted to ask you.
Cancer is a genetic error, right? You understand that?
Yeah, and it turns on. I'm talking about the turning on. We all have it, but the turning on is really runs heritage-wise.
Yeah, the probability of that fragility, yeah.
Really?
See, because my grandmother had breast cancer twice, did not die from it.
Was she older when she was diagnosed?
70 and 90.
Yeah, it's a different disease.
My sister got it at 40, didn't die.
That's the worst disease.
Totally fine.
Oh. Good.
But I'm probably at risk for it too. No kids,
get a BRCA test or anything?
I want to, but then if I get it and it says I have the gene, what am I going to cut my boobs off? Like, I don't, I just want to ignore it. Because...
That's what I've been doing, kind of ignoring.
Are you definitely going to get cancer if you have that gene?
No.
So why should
I know about it? There's a lot of stuff that's going on now. There's new tests for in utero babies that tells you all the most horrible Down syndrome things, a new hybrid test.
Yeah, yeah.
That they don't tell you you're getting that. Friends of mine got it. Not me, but friends of mine got it.
Be very careful.
And then they lived
testing
for a week not knowing because you have to get more tests until finally, there's nothing wrong.
Right. Ugh. Genetic testing is a little dicier for the very reason you guys are raising, which is genes are not destiny. They are proclivities. They're patterns.
There's a lot of money to be made in it, genetic testing. Yeah, I'm telling you.
I know. And we'll get better at it. But the whole epigenetic phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
That's
interesting.
Yeah, this is all very complex biology. And biology is all, people have to understand, just a big, giant probability equation. It's not a linear, it's not a mathematical equation, it's a probability. And so given you have a increased probability of cancer, don't smoke those cigarettes when you're that door, right?
I don't, but I used to smoke.
I'm just saying, that dramatically changes this proclivity in a bad direction.
Isn't there certain simple life choices? Drugs and alcohol.
Stop.
Cigarettes.
Yep.
You stop that. Those relate to...
Everything.
Everything.
Yeah. Those are two big,
and take
apple cider vinegar
every morning.
I do those enemas, apple cider vinegar.
Enemas?
Yeah.
Ow!
A little bit in there. It's very alkaline. But can't you eat sugar and watch a tumor grow? I really think like cancer has some kind of relation to like candida or some kind of fungal type thing, no?
Well, but cancer is hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different illnesses.
Ones, yeah.
Is it?
My grandma had oats cancer. Oats cancer, is that one?
In the lung?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
used to call it oats.
Gets it in November, dead and fucking mad.
Yeah. Well, there's something like that. There's nothing you can do about it.
And then Lemmy supposedly had one. He was diagnosed 2 days before and then died. But he was ignoring, I guess, the symptoms.
Lemmy had some other stuff going on. Who knows what was going on there. But let's get on to something more. Other. Jen's got to go in a couple minutes. Yeah. So we got to kind of wrap things up. Right?
So there's a guy out there for every gal. Just keep looking.
But is it?
By the way,
by the way,
he said, "Just keep looking." I'm like, I'm off looking. That's like the psychic told me keep. I'm like, no looking.
But I am. You better keep looking.
But what if your guy is in China and you never go to China?
But hang on, you guys. There's a bigger sort of arc to our conversation, which is we went from a lot of relationships, a love addiction, to how empty, I guess, would be the word we feel, and longing, and all this stuff. And then we start talking about horrible diseases and things and dying is really what we're talking about.
Because inevitably
you're trying to fill that void before you die.
But there may
so you can die in peace.
Well, that's kind of where I was going.
That's what my friend was saying. It's going to be you and Pete. And I said, yeah, that's probably going to be it. And we'll be cool with it. We'll be cool.
But that's the thing. That's the thing that we're nowhere near, any of us in this world, this country, is being sort of okay with what we've got. You know, we're all fearful of dying. We're all messed up in our relationship. And I think it goes back to us not having those deep connections that we need for everything to be okay. We have to sort of be in love with life to really be okay. And it's not just love ourselves. We have to love everything.
I go through that. Sometimes I'm really in love with
life. Good.
I was going to say, I want to live long enough to be okay with dying.
Right. But that's right. No, that's
good.
That's what I'm talking about.
But I don't have any examples of that in my family.
Okay, good. And even having a sister mom and all that stuff, that we were children during the 70s. It was fucked up. Yeah. Let's contribute to us coming out of that. I think that's what we're trying to do.
The phenomena that came up in my generation was addiction. I mean, before it was in the shadows, it was in the closet.
Betty Ford brought it out of the shadows. And then with the chemicals, the pills and things were around to cause severe, to amplify the process, right? The trauma and the pills.
Right.
I'm talking about how, in my little speck here on Earth, this huge problem manifested itself. I was a part of it. I was a victim of it.
Yep.
I got some of the earliest treatment for it, some of the greatest treatment for it. I luckily got out of it. I got enlightened about it, and then I'm able to help other people become enlightened.
Okay.
That's a magical thing to be a part of.
Yes.
Right?
I agree.
And
would you be okay with dying tomorrow?
No, I got too much to do.
And is that because you have so much you want to do and see? That's a selfish thing?
No, I got kids to raise.
Right. Okay, fine.
I have a question, though. Everything that we've been talking about, is it at intimacy disorders, this emptiness that the more I'm aware, the more I look around and go, wow, it's not just 20%. Wasn't the addiction rate like 20%? It's way more than that.
You alluded to love addiction, love avoidance cycle, which is what we're talking about, which everybody seems to be caught
in.
Listen, you
throw food into America's gumbo of addiction, and the entire nation is addicted.
Okay, but Amber, let me answer your question. You were kind of going there with the unhealthy dietary habits and all, but is everyone in the love avoidance cycle?
No. Is that at the heart of the massive amount of addicts that are out there?
No. At the heart of it is trauma, abandonment, abuse. At the heart, and then people get caught in the love addiction, love avoidance cycle.
So how do we enlighten? Okay. I'll give you an example. I saw this beautiful cherub of a little girl, like 7 or 8 years old, the other day, and the mother was extremely unfit and unhealthy and angry and unkempt. Mm. And I thought, that's what's going to happen to this beautiful
epigenetics,
like being.
But she's going to traumatize that child.
How do we enlighten people to realize the reason why you're so miserable is, and you can do something about it, is because of trauma, and you need to talk, and you need to explore, and you need to admit weakness and things that America is not too good at. But we're so politically correct, we're not supposed to notice that this woman shouldn't probably be raising a kid.
Yeah, I know there's that too. But if she did, I mean, you're right. Her ability, though, is going to be impaired, and that child is living in that woman's universe. You know, that's the universe she's absorbing.
So perfect.
I know. We fuck them up.
But this generation is starting to become very aware. My mother's generation was not aware. But then you got to think,
Mom knew she was fucking you up. She told me.
What?
She told me.
I don't remember that.
She told me when she was over on the other side. She goes, I know I'm part of this.
Oh, well, part of it is one thing.
Not taking the full responsibility, but certainly knew that she had not been the best.
I think she was afraid. No, she. I remember her being afraid we were going to blame her.
We never really discussed it to this day.
Everybody wants to just talk about the inner effect. When my son is distraught, 28 years old, on New Year's Eve night.
Your current son.
Yes. Yeah.
He has an older son.
I had to respond. I had to walk out of the concert I was at. I had to respond because I am in causation and in interrelation with that.
Yeah.
Parents don't want to admit that because they think admitting that admits blame for the entire thing. Right. No, you got a lot of blame for yourself.
I do, but we've never, the most we ever talked about it was on the show, actually.
Yeah, I think she was open to talking about it on the show.
She was afraid she was going to be blamed. I had to really work on her. Because I would not blame your mom. I would not blame her.
No parent is to blame for the poor decisions of their children. But the whole, yes.
Yeah, it's not okay what she did. It's not okay. But I wouldn't create another victim out of it.
Right.
I wouldn't blame her. I don't want, what does that do for anybody?
Well, I want to be so angry. I want to get angry at her once, but now she's sick. I want to be like, you know, till I was 35, I was in that apartment.
You know when we went over to her apartment
doing drugs?
That day? I thought you were going to get angry, and you were just like, da, 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 da.
Wasn't ready yet. The anger is deep and dark.
I'm so prepared driving over there like, she's going to fucking unload on
no,
her.
No, she's too Amber, she's too decrepit now.
It's not my experience.
This was 5 years ago.
Unloading on the people that are part of our story and responsible for the pain never really satisfies.
It doesn't. Okay, because sometimes I see on TV that, you know, they go to the, like on
fuck
an intervention
that.
Or something
bullshit.
And the father goes, "No, I wasn't there for you." And it looks like all this pain is relieved.
No, that's
editing.
Bullshit. That's
is
bullshit.
It?
Yeah. That's a fantasy. That's another fantasy this country lives in, that, you know, you can confront somebody, it's all over. No.
Okay.
No. I mean,
in the end though, it's the holes in all of us. And we're all responsible to fix those holes and not blame the people that caused those holes, but understand that they were caused.
Yeah.
We've gone way over, guys. We got to wrap this thing up. Jen's got to get out of here, even though she's enraptured.
I'm enraptured. So,
did you have fun?
Oh, my God. I so did. I love this podcast. I can't believe I got to be on it.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for letting me barge in.
Jen's,
absolutely.
Jen is a friend. You're a friend of Duncan's, too, aren't you?
Yeah,
Duncan Trussell. Oh,
I saw the Duncan thing when he was all drunk.
Yeah, what that I did?
Yeah.
It was very, he's great.
Judge?
Well, Jen does one, too. Jen does five of them. She's the queen of drunk
history.
Oh, I went
on a drunk history.
You've done
marathon.
Drunk history?
It was
she's
a drunk history marathon. I watch it. Which one's the young?
I love drunk history.
You don't remember Jen? Hers are the best.
I did.
Oh,
I'm going to
Google them.
The Woodrow Wilson was in a... His wife helped run the country.
Woodrow Wilson was stroked out.
I never saw that.
Winona Ryder would played Mary
Dyer.
Yeah,
I saw Winona Ryder one.
I did that.
No, you
one.
Saw...
Oh, that,
I think
you should have told me that earlier.
Yeah,
I just did a recent one about... journalism, where this political cartoonist took down Tammany Hall
with Jason Alexander was in it.
Yeah. You've seen it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Jen is considered the queen of drunk history.
I just sat. When was the drunk history marathon? I just sat and watched like
9 hours
of it.
Yeah,
it was
New Year's Eve. It was New Year's Eve or something.
That's what my life is.
Well, you can. What so her famous one is with Don Cheadle and
Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell. That about Frederick Douglass.
Frederick Douglass.
I gotta see that.
It's the best one.
Oh, I'm blonde then, so you can't recognize me.
Well, let me tell
God.
You, am I the last American paying $211 for cable because I just love television?
I still have cable, but it's
not that expensive.
I got everything and the NBA package. I don't care.
No,
I love television. It's worth it. Pay for
totally.
It.
Totally.
Fuck Fios.
All right, with that, everybody. Check Jen out on Drunk History. Also, Jen, what's your website?
JenKirkman.com.
JenKirkman.com. Jen is a stand-up. She's all over the country. She's all over the world. So you'll find her somewhere. And anything else you want to tell them? Your book?
Oh, sure. If they want to pre-order my new book called I Know What I'm Doing and Other Lies I Tell Myself.
And she has a stand-up on Netflix. We just saw it. It's very good. I forget the title.
I'm going to die alone and I feel fine.
Yes. I'm dying alone and I feel fine. It's very
That's what we were talking about.
Funny.
That could be a promo for this.
No, Jen is very tuned into all this stuff.
You know Becky then.
Who?
Dave Becky.
Oh, yeah.
I actually don't know him personally.
How could you not know him?
Because I don't know. I just was never his client, but I know people who know him.
Yeah.
We've got to get him in here. We've got to get him in here on this thing.
Oh, he'll do it.
All right. It's good. Amber, thank you. You're an inspiration. I don't know if you know that.
Thank
I think
you.
I've told you that many times.
Thank
but
you.
But you,
I have
you...
very few success stories, so please stay up.
It's a lot of work, a lot of emotional growth.
Yeah. And you've done it and stayed with it. And it's kind of, in some respect, all of us never stop growing.
And that's
some of the magic of this, right? Mm-hmm. And so be grateful for where we are. And I'm grateful as well as you are. I'm good to get to know you a little better.
Thank you.
Bob, today's episode is courtesy of Rocky Mountain Treatment Center.
Good to go.
Thank you.
See you next time.
Can be a lot to handle. Just let go. Boy, you gotta take again.